Jerry and Marge Gallard may not win awards or earn a fortune, but it made me smile. I don't take that for granted, especially nowadays. Bravo to Bryan Cranston and Annette Bening for believing in this can-do story and giving it their all. That's from Leonard Maltin, former guest here, of course, acclaimed film critic, leonardmaltin.com. He is talking about our featured new movie this week, Jerry and Marge Gallard, which is available on Paramount Plus. Director David Frankel was awesome. He was our guest last week, so now that I've seen the movie, I can actually review it.
Giving it their all. If you hear that as like a way to describe something, it's generally not great, right?
Right. It means the execution wasn't there, but the effort was there.
At least they tried. It's just...
Yeah, they gave it their all. I'm still laughing at your description of Billy Crystal last week when he was trying to get the sing-along from the crowd. It was like, here we go again. Here we go again.
Repeat after me. Hey. I know he didn't do that. I keep going. That's like where I keep going.
That's funny. Old movie this week. Heart 8, the great Philip Baker Hall, incredible character actor. He passed me at the age of 90 about 2 hours after me and Cody stopped recording last week. So, oh my God, I got to talk about Philip Baker Hall. And so Heart 8 is a great, great film. Paul Thomas Anderson's first movie. He then obviously cast Philip Baker Hall in Boogie Nights and Magnolia. He was an actor he was very fond of. But Heart 8 is a great film, and I wanted to go back in the archives and talk about that. And as far as our wild card this week, hey, Father's Day just happened, so great father and son movies. We'll go down and give a few of our favorites when it comes to that list. As always, support Cinephile, please go to Apple Podcasts where you can subscribe, rate, and review. I always appreciate reading all the feedback from all of you, and keep it coming. First and foremost, Cody, happy Father's Day.
Same to you, Adnan. We're recording this podcast a little earlier than we generally do, and I don't know if it's because I know that, but I can hear it in your voice that it's a little earlier than we normally record this.
Yeah, you're probably right. The reason why my parents are visiting...
I like this, honestly, dude, though. Like, usually you're the most polished, crisp broadcaster in the game. I like this. This is... You're a human, man. It's early in the morning. You probably had a long Father's Day weekend, and you're just like, you know what? Like, I might be a little tired right now. That's okay sometimes.
You're right. A little groggy, a little sluggish.
Yes.
We were hoping to go to the beach today. My parents are visiting, so I said, okay, beach day. But everybody's kind of tired and just, you know, lethargic. So I said, let me just bang out this podcast, and then we'll go on our way. Yeah.
But we're good, man. We're still going to have a good one. I like it. We got some good movies today. I'm happy. I'm excited.
Anything special for Father's Day? You and I are both lucky. Our fathers are still around, which is great.
I ranted on the Lebitard show last week, and I have regrets about it because I kind of was saying that with my in-laws and my dad, Father's Day isn't mine yet. It's still theirs. So I have to, like, go around, see all the families. So I was thinking in my mind that when Father's Day comes around, I can do literally anything I want. But that's not the case. I have to go see family. I have to see my dad. I have to see my in-laws. So it hasn't really become my day yet. But like you said, very grateful to have these in-laws and my dad still around. So I'm not complaining. I was just doing a shtick. But, you know, I saw family is what I did. I did not get to have the Chris Cody weekend of my dreams. It was just, you know, I got to see family. So we were good.
Yeah, I remember I worked with a guy who said, he goes, you know, Father's Day should just be just dad being left alone. I was like, what? Mm-hmm. He's like, I just want to be on the couch. I just want to watch golf, and that's it. I'm like, I don't want to watch golf. But I understood his point. He was like, hey, it's my day. I just want to do my thing.
It's like, oh, it's my day. What are we doing today? All right, I got to be my in-laws at noon and my parents at 4. Okay. Looks like I have a lot of time for me today. Anyways.
Yeah, exactly. It's supposed to be a me day here. Father's Day should be every day.
Saturday was my day. Like, basically, my wife on Saturday was like, what do you want to do? Anywhere you want to go eat? So Saturday, honestly, became the day of whatever I wanted to do. So I went out, did the water taxi on Fort Lauderdale with my daughter and my wife, drove around, ate lunch on the water, just did like a Fort Lauderdale touristy day.
Oh, that's great, man. Water taxi's underrated.
Yes. And it's all tourists, and it's funny just to like people watch on there, and then they're like, where are you guys from? Like, we're here. We're just like that one local family that's doing this. But it's so beautiful. I like to go through Las Olas and just look at all the houses and be like, I want to have that house one day.
Oh, yeah. Someday I got to get down to Fort Lauderdale. Sounds fantastic. Also, of course, I'm an avid follower of your feed in the Dan Lebitard show. Did you get Chris Whittingham to smoke weed when you went to a weed farm?
No.
Yeah, I figured he wasn't going to... Like, why would he...
Yeah, I mean...
It's just not his thing.
The stigma's gone, right? Like, I feel like now he could do it. Like, he seriously still feels like, if I'm seen doing this, this is a negative on my resume. So he has that, like... thought of it, like, but you know, no, we didn't get him to do it, and but I did it for him.
Yeah, that's the thing. I've never smoked weed either, like Whittingham, and because I just was always a, you know, I'm somebody who obeys the law. It was illegal. But now, like you said, the stigma's gone. It is legal. I could go anywhere right now and buy some edibles if I wanted to. I was driving the other day. You should have seen this line. I don't know what the hell it's called. Ascent, I think, is a store. Big weed flag. I'm like 30 people outside. I'm like, oh, I could just go and get some weed.
Yeah,
but I'm 43 years old. Like, why would I do it now? Like,
oh, I'm with you. Long. I think, I mean, if you've never done it, I imagine that you'd be like, oh my God, my tolerance is so low. I would start freaking out. Like, I understand once you get to a certain point of I've never done it, I'm at this point a little just like nervous about what it would do to me. So like, I get it.
At this point, although it does make me think of Alan Arkin in Little Miss Sunshine, when he's giving advice, he says, you know, he goes, you should do a lot of drugs. He goes, when you're young, you shouldn't. He goes, you're stupid if you do it. When you get old, you should do it. Why wouldn't you? Like, that's a fair point, actually. When I'm 75, I should be doing acid.
Good
movie.
At
that point, what do you have to live for?
Little Miss Sunshine. Really good movie.
Yeah, great film from 2006. Maybe we'll review that some other time. All right, so The Weed Farm was good. We're hoping to get Ricky Williams and Stan Van Gundy at some point, by the way.
We're working on that.
I do want to say congrats to the Golden State Warriors. They win their fourth title in the last 8 years and sixth final in 8 years. And whenever I think of the Golden State Warriors, specifically Steph Curry, I always think of Al Pacino. So a few years back, I was incredulous. Al Pacino, a night with Al Pacino and Joy Behar hosting, inexplicably. I'm like, well, I don't know how Joy Behar got this gig. But Joy Behar hosting, it was in Connecticut, Mohegan Sun, the casino, a night with Al Pacino, 200 I think it was $150 just to go hear him speak, and it was $250 for a meet and greet. So I said, oh my God. So me and my wife Amy go, $500, no problem. Meet and greet, yes, let's do it. Go there, and the hour plus was fine. He told the stories that I've always heard, but he was good, he was funny, he was engaging. Joy Behar was fine, she asked what you would ask. And then afterwards, we're lining up to go meet Al Pacino. And I'd say of the crowd, I mean, it was pretty full house, maybe, I don't know, 3,000, 4,000 people, maybe 1,000 are going for the meet and greet, the exclusive, the VIP experience. And the woman in front of me is like starting to hyperventilate, and I'm like, "Are you okay?" And she's like, "You don't understand. Like, I'm a huge Al Pacino fan." I'm like, "We're all Al Pacino. Like,
yeah, obviously, I mean, come on.
Yeah, like, what
you don't got to be the biggest Al Pacino fan here. Like, we're all Al Pacino fans.
This is what I'm saying. Everyone starts telling them, but I've seen all these films 72 times. I'm like, you don't need to start bragging what a big fan you are. Like, we're all fans, obviously. What do you think we're all doing here?" And she goes, "No, you understand the level of fandom." I'm just like, I'm starting to get like,
I love how you're thinking. You don't got to give me your bona fides, lady, while wanting to give her your bona fides. You're like, actually, I'm the biggest Al fan, but we don't need to get into that.
Yeah, I started like kind of quiz him. Like, have you seen Chinese Coffee? Didn't think you had. Movie he directed. Exactly. Knew you wouldn't know that. Of course you don't. You've just seen Scarface 20 times. And she goes, no, look at my leg. And she starts lifting up her pants, and it's a tattoo of Pacino on her calf.
She wins.
Okay, you got me on that one. I do not have an Al Pacino tattoo on my calf.
If you had one on your ass, you just turned around and you're like, how about that, huh?
Like, what do you think about that? There you go. So you know, each person that goes in, you can't actually see them when they go in. The door closes, but I can hear her crying. And I can hear his baritone, and I can hear her crying. I'm like, oh my God, how do I fall somebody who's
Why
crying?
Why are you crying? Yeah, sorry.
So I go in, and I'm like, Alex, hey! Like, and I said to him, I want to be like, we're old friends, like Norm from Cheers. I'm like, Alex, hey!
Should have been like, how do I follow that?
Yeah, except we just started crying. But I said, let me pick something obscure, because hopefully then he'll appreciate it more. So I said, Al, I saw you at the Toronto Film Festival. He goes, oh, I remember you. Which, of course, is not true. Right. Why would he say he remembers me? I'm like, no, that's not true.
I do. But,
yeah, I said, I saw you at the Toronto Film Festival, and I wanted to let you know I love Chinese Coffee. There's three films that Al Pacino has ever directed. And the local Stigmatic, I think he's fairly partial to. But I mentioned Chinese Coffee, which I think is the best of the three. Him and the late Jerry Orbach.
You do that because you know that's like him directing. You're trying to like massage his ego right here. You're
right.
Like,
I would think every other person is going there like, hey, hoo-ah, son of a woman. So I'm like, hey, man, Chinese Coffee, Toronto Film Festival. He's like, okay, 1999. This guy, you know. Yeah. But I don't think it had an impact. He was like, I remember you. I'm like, oh, yeah, great. So you literally just go up to him, you get a picture, and he's sitting down. I'm standing up. Which I've posted the picture before. I'll post it again if you want. But I remember Van Pelt was like, God, he's so short. I'm like, he's sitting.
Yeah.
I'm like, he is short, but he is sitting, to be clear. I'm not 5 feet taller than him. So we take the picture, and then I go, yeah. I shake his hand. I go, hey, Al, I actually work at ESPN in Connecticut here, and I would love, you know, if you came by sometime. Or I don't think I said my podcast. I said, great if you can come by. And he goes, oh, yeah. I go, sports. I love sports. I'm like, really? I go, yeah. I know you're from the Bronx. I'm a Yankee fan. You like your baseball. He's like, oh, and the basketball on right now. I'm like, yeah. I go, the Warriors. Unbelievable. Great story. He goes, who's that guy? And I go, Steph Curry. He goes, yeah. He goes, he just glides. So every time I see Steph Curry, I just picture Al Pacino somewhere in his Palais Lazette going, that guy, he just glides.
What do you think about, did you see this fake Klay Thompson getting banned, like sneaking into the arena? There's this Klay Thompson lookalike, and he sneaks into the Golden State Arena just by looking like Klay Thompson. But the security let him in the parking lot. He's driving into the arena with his jersey on. That should have been a red flag for the security people. It's like, why is he wearing his jersey? Did you see, like, if you had to
I have not seen this. I have to look up fake Klay Thompson. Oh, this is incredible.
If you had to, if you, who's your doppelganger out there that you could sneak into somewhere as?
Do you think? Chris Chelios. I mean, I've told the Chris Chelios story before. Yeah. I'm in Detroit. I'm reading a Tiger Woods biography, and I have a Canada hat on, and I'm wearing shorts and a black t-shirt. Couldn't be more nondescript.
Yeah.
And a guy says to me, two guys are together. I have my head down. Goes, excuse me, Mr. Chelios, can I get a picture? And I looked up. And
yes,
I remember this. And I was like, oh my God. And I was like, sure. And of course, I completely played along with it. And I said, you guys are big Blackhawks fans? Because I think of Chelios with the Blackhawks, but I was in Detroit at the airport. They go, oh, Red Wings. Like, oh, of course, yeah, Detroit. I had some great years here. And as I said that, I worked with Chris Chelios. We did the World Cup together. And he himself said to me at one point, you know, we do really look alike. And I'm like, yeah, yeah. Because he goes, my wife is saying something. I'm like, no, we do, we do. And Ben Boma, who's a hilarious guy, he was telling Steve Levy, you should toss back to the studio and say, for more on the intermission report, here's Chris Chelios, Brett Hull, and Chris Chelios. Because it would have been a great life. He would have loved it. But to this day, John Barron, who's a researcher at MLB Network, great guy, loves the Mets. I saw him in the hall 2 days ago. He goes, hey, ever tell you look at Chris Chelios? I go, buddy, I get it all the time. I got mistaken in an airport. So
yeah,
I took a picture with those guys. And I remember afterwards, the guy says, I can't wait to put this up on the mantle. And I told this story to Mike and Mike, and Golic said, could you imagine when they're going to blow that picture up? And someone's going to walk in and go, why do you have a picture of Adnan Burke on your wall?
That is a great. I'm looking at Chelios now. Wow, you really do.
Yeah. Doppelganger, me and Chris Chelios. Stu Gantz loves it, too. I said this to him. I go, who do you think I look more like? I go, you used to get Ben Stiller. Nagandi's like, Ben Stiller. He goes, no, he goes, I'm Team Chelios. He goes, I think Chelios.
Ben Stiller, yeah. I guess I kind of see it. The head shape.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit of that stuff. All right, enough nonsense. I'll look up this fake Klay Thompson a bit later on. Once again, keep those reviews coming. I did see this here from dblack519. Thank you so much for making my week. Great movie reviews. I'm a huge movie lover. I know you've said in the past. Just curious why you hate Forrest Gump so much. I think I've talked about it, but I can do it again if you want some other time. A bit obscure. You should check out the ER episode that Ray Liotta did. Really good TV. Okay, maybe we'll get into that at some point. I didn't even know Ray Liotta was on. Well, it's interesting. Okay. Also, this one was from a while ago, April 12th. Ma'am is anti-vax. I'm so sorry, Adnan, that Cody and you didn't crush her for this. You guys hate Cinephobe because Maze is better than you. So, I don't know what people are talking about this stuff for.
Wait, what's the first line? I know Maze is the Cinephobe producer. What's the
tweet? He said, Mayim is anti-vax.
Mayim Bialik. What a random callback.
Oh, okay. He's like, oh, you guys should have crushed her. But he gave Maze props. Listen, we're all about giving props here. So, Maze, enjoy the shout-out. Thank you for giving us, I don't know. Thank you to the guy for listening to us. And Maze, great job. Of course, Cinephobe is now a part of our universe, so... Hey, there's no rivalry here, okay? We give love to everybody. Let's get into the movies. Jerry and Marge, go large. The story is this, and thanks again to David Frankel, who came on last week. Based on the true story about couple Jerry and Marge Selby, who win the lottery and use the money to revive their small town. I thought it was a nice little film. It's a quaint movie. It's exactly what you were expecting, which is a couple of really good actors in Bryan Cranston and Annette Bening, award-winning. Cranston's won an Emmy, Tony, of course, Annette Bening, Hollywood royalty in her own right as a great actress. Loved her in Bugsy, but also married to Warren Beatty. So it's good to just see actors like this get roles like this. I always wonder, like, you hear women often say that, once you get to 50-plus, there's no roles for you. I'm like, that's true. So whenever there is a role for a woman like 60-plus, I'm like, all right, cool. And it is the role that you might expect if somebody of that age, older, you know, you're in the Midwest, just living your life, enjoying your Belgian waffles like I do in United Flights. And all of a sudden, the dad, who is, you know, retiring now, mathematical mind, very sharp, very analytical. And he figures out, basically, you know, the sum total of this lottery, the more you play it, the better your odds are you're going to win. So he takes the very huge risk of taking money out of their retirement fund. He doesn't have a whole lot. I think he's got like $8,000. He's like, all right, let me take it out, let it ride. Goes out, wins, doubles it. Let's say he makes $16,000. Ends up hiding the money in cereal boxes and in the popcorn, which his granddaughter starts to go through. His wife says to him one day, you know, what about the pantry? And he says, okay, I'm playing the lottery. She's like, I just meant, it was a little messy. Like, what are you talking about? He tells her the story, figuring she'll be upset. She's like, no, I'm all in. I love it. Let's do it. So they find a reason to live, so to speak. They're, you know, I wouldn't say they have a dull, drab life, but they're just living their life. And all of a sudden they win the lottery and they're excited. So but
what's the actual strategy that he implores? Or is it just in numbers? Like, if you play a lot, that's it. Like,
yeah,
no strategy outside of that. Like, there's nothing he figures out outside of just play a lot.
Just play a lot. Because he goes there and he buys, like, it's insane. He goes, I need $8,000 worth of these tickets of the game called Windfall.
Is the gas station attendant like, what?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Because at one point, there's none of them where they're living and they have to drive 10 hours to Michigan. And I'm like, wow. I'm like, I guess a part of it was like, that seems excessive. No, actually, if you knew you were going to win at a game, $20,000, you would drive 10 hours. Of course you would. I'm like, yeah. Right. So they just load it up, go to Michigan. They make some sandwiches, stay in some budget motel. They go there. And the guy says, like, it's going to take you all night to do 8,000 tickets to play them all. And by the way, the mindlessness of having to go through all their tickets afterwards. Like, there's one scene where their daughter-in-law is like, oh, she misses one of the numbers. Like, it's okay, I'll do that. Like, you have to really love your numbers to go through 8,000 tickets to find the winners. But again, they find a purpose, find a reason to go. There's some kids from Harvard who are pretty smart, though, and they figure out the same system as well. So if you're looking for a nemesis in their story, it's not the lottery people. They're like, yeah, fine, go ahead. I guess they're happy to winning. Because again, these lottery people, they make billions of dollars. Yeah. Who cares? One guy wins 50,000. We're still making 10 times that, 50 times that. So the Harvard people figured out they end up being the nemesis because they threaten to expose Cranston and Benning and say, okay, you know, we have our own plot. We're also showing up at these places. Back off, that kind of thing. But it ends up being, like I said, a very sweet, nice story. You, however, had a different experience. You tried to watch Jerry and Marge Go Large. What happened?
Yeah, I had just your stereotypical password dilemma with it. I don't know, like, am I allowed to admit on here? Me and my family, we're big password sharers.
But that's fine. Yeah, go
like
ahead.
Me, my wife, my in-laws, my parents, like, we all pay for one of them and we all share all of them.
I think most people do that. There's nothing wrong with that.
And it's just, Paramount Plus is not one of the ones that I have, like, logged in all the time. So I needed to get the password. I text my wife to get it from her brother. Her brother texts back. That password doesn't work. Now we're at, like, 10:30 p.m. on a Sunday. So I'm like, do I text the brother-in-law? We've never really texted this late before. I shoot him the text. He responds. He goes, that one should work. It was just a whole thing where the password wasn't working. It got to be past 11 p.m. and then I was like, screw it.
I had not similar troubles because it wasn't a password issue, but I had troubles in that I had the screener sent to me via Paramount, but I don't know if you ever had this happen. You're watching it and every 2 minutes it just stops and it's like playback error. So I have to go back and re-log in again. So press it again. All right, start watching a minute and boom, playback here, it goes back. And when you play it again, it goes like past 20 seconds what you'd already seen. So you have to rewatch the same thing for 20 seconds. It goes another minute, stops again. Is this a 92-minute movie? It took me 3 hours to watch it. It was incredible. Like 57 times I had to keep pressing this button. It was so mind-numbing. I couldn't believe I had the patience to hang with it. But I'm like, no, free movie. David Frankel was great to us, had to do it. So I will give the film 2.5 Maple Leafs. Like I said, I think it's a sweet film. It's something a little bit different, definitely appealing to an older demographic. Michael McKean's in the film, who I love. Didn't know who a lot. He's like one of the friends of the family. I, of course, love him from Spinal Tap, Better Call Saul. Larry Wilmore's in the movie as well. He plays his accountant. But yeah, it's a sweet little story. David Frankel, the director, the writers are Jason Fagone and Brad Copeland. I'm curious about the article which it was based on, Jerry and Marge Go Large. I would love to check out the real story and see exactly how the story came to be. How are you when it comes to lottery? You're there watching a Panthers game. They go, we got a 50-50. Does Cody dip in a few bucks on the lottery?
On the lottery, like in a gas station, it has to be huge. I'll play Powerball if it's like hundreds of millions. 50 million just isn't enough for me. Now, I don't know what my logic is there, but if it gets into hundreds of millions, I'll buy a Powerball or two, but I don't do that regularly. A 50-50 at a Panthers game specifically, Now you're talking my language. I've got a few beverages in me, so I'm feeling all, especially in the playoffs, I donated a few hundred dollars, I'd say, total, like over the season of like 20 or 30 bucks a game. I have season tickets. So like, I'm in it for the long haul. I'm like, if I do this every time, I'm bound to, and I never even come close, man. These things, these numbers are like 12 digits long.
Yeah.
I just want to get the first three digits. When I see that number pop up, because usually the way it works is I have 70 tickets. Because like the way it works is 20 bucks gets you like 70 to whatever. And all of them start with the same number. So I'm like, all right, I need to start with 428. And then the thing pops up, first number, 753. It's like, I'm never even close.
Yeah, that's frustrating. I'm with you. At least get like six numbers in. Like, okay, I feel like we're making progress.
Right. Oh, I've hit the first four. This is it. Did we win? Like, it's never even exciting. I know right off the bat that I always lose because I never even get the first number right. It's like, ugh. I need it to start with a seven. If we start with a seven, we got a chance. All right, here's the number, 3, 4, 5. It's like, okay.
You got, well, moving on.
It's not even exciting.
I just had an inkling, though. I had an inkling. The 50-50 to Panthers game. Like, that has to be Cody's language. Oh. I myself am not a lottery guy, but one of my old bosses, Dave Rutherford, who's a great guy and was very instrumental in my career, getting me so much work when I was in Toronto, he won the lottery like a year or two ago, and I couldn't believe it. I mean, one of my friends texted me, because, you know, Rutherford won the lottery? Like, he did? How much did he win? He goes, he won $1 million. I'm like, yes.
Wow.
So I texted him. I'm like, wow. And here's the thing. I'd never known anybody who won the lottery that much. And anyway, I was a former news director at the Score Television Network, and I said, hey, did you always play the lottery? Like, he goes, that's the number one question I'm being asked. Like, how much money did you put in to now have this reward? And like, it's kind of like you. He goes, listen, I'm at a gas station. I get a scratch ticket, $5 here and there, $5 here and there, but nothing.
He might be underselling that. Sometimes people gamble more than that.
So I'm like, just tell me the number. Like, did you put in $100,000 in 50 years of your life and then get a million? He's like, I don't know.
Is this public knowledge that he won the lottery, or are you outing this?
And then I texted like our buddies from the score. I'm like, hey, do you know Rutherford just won the lottery?
I just want to make sure it's been public knowledge, though, because you're putting it on a podcast now.
I think it's fine. Maybe we'll bleep out his name if you want. But I mean, he ended up texting me the picture because I said, now after taxes, you're down to, like, it's Canadian taxes. Yeah. You're down to $600,000. He goes, no, it's tax-free. I said, really? You get $1 million?
What's tax-free? In Canada?
In Canada. He goes, the lottery is tax-free.
Not in America.
Not in America. You win $1 million, you're getting $500,000.
Well, you can do payments. In America, it's... Oh, I know in Florida. I don't know. I think it's by state. In Florida, I know that it's... You can either do lump sum, which is like half of it up front, just all of it, you get it, or like payments. Like you can get...
What would you want to do? Lump sum. Let it ride.
If it's a huge amount, probably regardless, I'm doing lump sum.
Regardless, if it's $20,000, I want it all. If it's $500,
it would be
bucks,
nice just to know I'm going to get like a check for $750,000. Like,
yeah.
If I just was like, okay, wait, I don't have to work anymore. Now I'm getting for the next 50, like 60 years, I'm getting $750,000 a year or something like that. Like, that would be kind of enticing of like, oh, I can go ham with this money because I got more coming, as opposed to like.
That's a good point. Like, you don't shoot your load all in one spot, so to speak. Yeah. I just always find it funny when people say when you win the lottery, you'd still keep working. Because I asked Dave, I'm like, so what are you going to do? Because he's 58 at this point. He hasn't been working as much. So he said, listen, I'll tell you this. Because it's better to win it now at 58. My kids are through school rather than if I was 28. Because if I was 28, I'm like, I got to get a house. All this is going to the mortgage. How much is going to the kids? Now I'm I'm good. Like, I've lived my life. I'm like, yeah, sure. Like, now you can, like, to your point, just go wild. Go travel the world. Do whatever you want with it.
Yeah.
So I always think if you and I won the lottery, we'd still keep working because we have great jobs. We might work a lot less. Right? We just dictate our hours. Like, I'm just going to work twice a week. You would just tell Dan, like, I'm not going to work that much. But go ahead.
Yeah, I would probably still work. Yeah. I might not. I just might quit this podcast. No, I'm just kidding.
You would tell Dan, I'm working 2 days a week and I'm quitting Cinephile. I'm dictating.
Or I would hire somebody personally to do all my editing for this podcast. So I would just become like your essential like co-host, and I could send the files off to somebody else.
That's a good point.
Just somebody on my payroll, like my assistant.
If we win the lottery, you just make life easier for yourself because money will make life easier for you. I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what we're doing. All right, that's Jerry and Marge Go Large. 2.5 Maple Leafs. Once again, it is on Paramount Plus.
Are you tired of snooty wines and their old world wine culture? Confused by words like malolactic fermentation? Yeah, we are too. So with 19 Crimes, you can do the fancy schmancy tilt, sip, smell. Ooh, I think it tastes like old red cherry, a little bit of wood and mahogany, a little leather. You can do all that stuff or don't. 19 Crimes is the rebel of wine culture telling stories of rogues and rule breakers who overcame adversities. From convicts banished to Australia to the legendary icon Snoop Dogg himself. 19 Crimes wine is defiant by nature, bold in character, and always uncompromising. 19 Crimes, the official wine of the UFC, pick up in stores nationwide or online at 19crimes.com. Enjoy responsibly. Copyright 2024, Sonoma, California.
I want to talk about Heartache because Philip Baker Hall just passed away. The movie is called Heartache and it stars Philip Baker Hall. Professional gambler Sidney teaches John the tricks of the trade. John does well until he falls for cocktail waitress Clementine. The stories behind this are amazing. Paul Thomas Anderson, who's one of our greatest directors now, Boogie Nights and Magnolia and The Master and so many other wonderful movies. Licorice Pizza, obviously, just nominated for writing and directing. Heartache was his first movie. He said he was working as a production assistant on... You know, PAs are just getting made dirt races, some lowly PAs working on some documentary. And Philip Baker Hall happened to be a part of it. I think he was like voicing it. And he went up to me and said, listen, you're like one of my favorite actors. Like, I'm going to write a movie for you. Like, I'm going to make you a star. He said something like that kind of broad. And Philip Baker Hall was like, yeah, okay, cool, whatever. At this point, he's, you know, some 60-year-old actor, been acting for a long time. But they had a mutual love of coffee and cigarettes. And sure enough, P.T. Anderson writes the script. He's 23 years old. He writes this movie. And he put it in the Sundance Lab And I guess somewhere through that way, he got a grant, he got some money. And he said at that time, because of Pulp Fiction was so popular in 94, there was a real movement towards independent film. And if you had a decent script and you had some ideas, and you could get it made. So he said, I think Heartache was about $3 million, and I was able to get the money through Sundance, the Sundance Film Festival. And I told Philip Baker Hall, you're my guy. He's like, all right, cool. And then he was able to get John C. Reilly, who at that point was an up-and-coming actor, had done 5 or 10 movies. Gwyneth Paltrow, which I'm still shocked we got Gwyneth Paltrow, who I think was a fairly big star in 96. And Samuel L. Jackson, who has always been a star. Also, the great Philip Seymour Hoffman ended up having a great relationship with Paul Thomas Anderson. Again, was in many of his films. He shows up in one incredible scene playing craps. I'm going to light the cigarette. I'm going to light the cigarette. He's in it 3.5 minutes, but he's hysterical. But it's a really cool success story. Having said that, before I get into Philip Baker Hall, P.T. Anderson says he makes a movie, doesn't know what he's doing, because I'm 23 years old. You know, I've watched a ton of movies. I'm a real movie geek, but I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I'm kind of bluffing my way through it. The company is Reicher Entertainment. He's like, they're a video company. They see his cut and go, okay, we don't like your cut. So they did their own cut of the movie. And he goes, well, I don't like your cut of the movie. Like, it's different than my cut. I'm like, oh, whatever. Like, we own the movie. And he was like, no, we can't do this. This is not fair. I'm like, whatever. It's we own the movie. Our version's better. And by the way, we're going to call it Sydney, which is the lead character's name. He's like, no. Oh, no, sorry. He wants to call it Sydney. Paul Thomas Anderson's Sydney. We're calling it Heart Eight, which is a move you do in gambling. If you watch the film, you know it. He's going to go for the Heart Eight.
Oh,
and he was like, no, it's not
Love a Heart Eight. Love a Heart Eight and craps.
Yeah, Heart Eight. Exactly. And craps. Cody knows.
I know exactly Heart Eight.
Yeah. So he's like, no, it's got to be Sydney. He said eventually what happened is he pushed and pushed and pushed. He had just written the script for Boogie Nights, and New Line Cinema loved that script and gave him a bunch of money. He took the money that he got from Boogie Nights and gave it to this company, Reicher, to say, hey, I'll buy it from you just so I can release my cut. And they're like, okay, fine. One stipulation. We're still going to call it Heart Eight. He was like, okay, fine at that point. He said, now he's okay with the name. He still prefers Sydney, but he was like, I'm actually okay with it. Fine, I get it. So he ends up releasing his cut. Let's say it was in, I don't even know, 10 movie theaters. But I remember hearing about it because Siskel and Ebert loved it. And last night I went back and watched the Siskel and Ebert review. It's amazing. And they don't even mention Paul Thomas Anderson. They're talking about Philip Baker Hall, who's this veteran actor who Roger Ebert correctly says was very famous for a film called Secret Honor, which is what P.T. Anderson loved him in. It came out in 1984, little scene movie. It's available on Criterion. And Philip Baker Hall plays Richard Nixon. It's like a one-act movie. It's the whole thing. Now, I'll be honest. I went and saw Secret Honor a few years ago because I love Philip Baker Hall and Paul Thomas Anderson. Wouldn't recommend it. I mean, unless you're really into Richard Nixon. It's 90 minutes of a guy playing Richard Nixon on his final night in office. The most memorable part of the movie is at the end, Richard Nixon is just pissed. He goes, fuck him! Fuck him! And the camera cuts like 5 times. He says like, fuck him! And I go, okay, well, that part was awesome. When Richard Nixon loses his mind, the rest of the film I don't love. But when Paul Thomas Anderson told Philip Baker Hall, hey, I love Secret Honor, he was like, wow, like 100 people have seen that movie. I already like this 23-year-old kid who wants to put me in this movie. Anyways, Ebert says, great movie. Gene Siskel says, this is 1996, he goes, he is mesmerizing this film. He goes, he's going to get a lot of work from this movie. He goes, casting agents are going to see this, top-level directors go, who is this guy? Look at this guy's face. And he has a quintessential actor's face. Philip Baker Hall died at the age of 90 last week. And in the obit, I'm so glad people said, Heart Eight actor, and also mentioned his relationship with Paul Thomas Anderson, Boogie Nights, Magnolia, etc. But you have to look as, you know, life is populous. What is he most known for? Guys like my brother. He's Bookman from Seinfeld. Yep. So I really texted my brother, like, hey, Philip Baker, I love Heart Eight. He doesn't care. I'm like, Bookman from Seinfeld. Yeah, Bookman from Seinfeld.
Yeah.
And Larry David is quoted in a couple of the obituaries saying, he's one of the funniest actors I have ever worked with. He said,
He was great in Curb.
He said he had him in that Seinfeld episode. He goes, Jerry couldn't get through it. He was laughing so hard. Then he cast him in Curb, where he was amazing playing a doctor. And he also had him in the Larry David movie, Clear History. So Larry David goes, trust me, I think the guy's amazing.
He was the neighbor in Modern Family. He did some good TV roles.
Did a lot of TV. He's kind of popping up here and there. And that's why P.T. Anderson said, he goes, he's been a guy. He's around. His first love was theater. He actually did, coincidentally, American Buffalo, which I just saw on Broadway. He did that, I think, want to say like in the 90s or something like that, way back when. But he loved theater, did like over 100 theater credits, and would pop up in movies and shows time to time. Great in Midnight Run, if you like a great comedy from 87. But Heart Eight was really his moment to shine, and it's an awesome film. It's about 100 minutes long. I'm glad that P.T. Anderson got the cut that he wanted to reveal. The first scene, he's picking up John C. Reilly, who is just a down-and-out loser, let's be honest. And he says to him, if I give you $50, how long could you live on that? What would you do with that? And he's like, well, I go eat something. I'm starving. He's like, well, what if you had to bet your way through it? He's like, what do you mean bet my way through it? And he was like, you come with me right now. We're going to go to Vegas. I'm going to teach you how to bet. I'm going to help you out. And immediately John C. Reilly's like, who are you, old man? Like, he goes, I'm not some, like, gay slur. Yeah. Like, what do you think I'm going to do? And he's like, listen, just come with me. He's like, I'm not going to suck dick. And he goes like, okay, I got it. This is your last chance. Do you want to come with me or not? He goes, listen, you try something on me. I know 3 different types of karate. Like, I will bust you up. And Bob Becker's all like, I believe you. And that's the way the movie begins. He takes him to Vegas, and the first half of the film, he kind of shows him the ropes, right? Hey, you have your, and it's really kind of cool. It's interesting, just the lifestyle. P.T. Anderson, again, 23 years old. Where do you come up with this stuff? He said he had worked in Reno a little bit, so he'd learned a little bit about the gambling trade and put it into the script. It just kind of came out of him. But I thought the first half of the movie is fine. I mean, we've seen that before, that kind of, you know, mentor teaching the student, you know, Karate Kid, wax on, wax off. Here's how you gamble. Give the chips here. Give it to this woman here. They'll comp you for the room. Say it just to this guy. It's kind of interesting. But the second after it gets fascinating, because now he's been there for a couple of years, and he's now molded John C. Reilly into a professional gambler. He falls in love with this waitress, Clementine, by Gwyneth Paltrow, and then Samuel L. Jackson shows up, and Jimmy is John C. Reilly's friend, and Philip Baker Hall does not like him. And John C. Reilly says, hey, he kind of feels like you don't like him. He's like, yeah, I don't care for him. And Jimmy, Samuel L. Jackson, ends up giving the big secret of the movie, which I will not spoil. I want people to watch the movie, as to why exactly is Sidney helping John? Like, why would this 60-year-old codger all of a sudden just help this random guy? And Samuel L. Jackson puts the pieces together, calls him on it, and you go from there. And I just, the film is so quietly observed. There's so many subtle gestures. As Gene Siskel said, he goes, and he doesn't even know P.T. Anderson at that time, right? He's this unknown director. He's like, I love the way the director uses those little insert shots. You know, he builds up drama through the gambling and really kind of knows that world very well. But he's got that actor's face, man. Like, when people talk about having a matinee idol face, they're talking about Robert Redford or Paul Newman. But when they talk about a quintessential actor's actor, that's Philip Baker Hall. Like, I read one of the reviews, and they said he looked old even when he was young. Like, and you look at him now, just the bags under his eyes, that gravelly voice. But like a true actor, somebody who loved the craft, and I think was always, in whatever work he was in, he was good, to your point. Modern Family, Curb, like he can do comedy, he can do serious drama. If you saw Philip Baker Hall in a film, you knew this guy was going to deliver.
And it was just like little roles in movies. Like, he was in Rush Hour. He was the lieutenant in Rush Hour. Fired Up. Do you know Fired Up? It's a stupid comedy from the
movie. No, I don't know Fired Up.
2009. Just a dumb comedy. He plays the teacher in it. That's like when I think of him, just because like that's where my mind went first. Obviously, there's bigger roles, but just so many small roles, man. I had to mention Fired Up. For the people that are my age, it's a dumb movie, but if you know Fired Up, it's really funny.
Would have been amazing on his dying day, someone just goes, Phil, you know, what film are you proudest of? He's like, Fired Up.
Yeah.
What did you say?
He's like, you little Fired Up. He's like an angry coach. He's like, you little shitheads. Little shitheads. He's really funny in that.
I'm amazed he lived to 90, because I don't know if he actually smoked in life, but he looks like he smoked. He looks like he smoked a pack a day. Like, Jesus. I'm like, this guy made it to 90? Like, wow. Yeah. Philip Baker Hall. But again, Heart 8, incredible film. And I just love what P.T. Anderson did. He was like some 23-year-old kid. He's like, bro, I'm going to give you a movie. I'm going to make a movie about you. And he did. And it's a great film. And he ended up getting a lot of work out of it, because he obviously worked in Boogie Nights, Magnolia, and those other films that Chris and I are mentioning. So rest in peace to Philip Baker Hall. Outstanding lead performance in Heart 8. As Gene Siskel said, his performance is mesmerizing. Jonathan Rosenbaum of Chicago Reader. This first feature by writer-director Paul Thomas Anderson is impressive for its lean and unblemished storytelling, but even more so for its performances. Michael Wilmington of Chicago Tribune. It's done with such intelligence and feeling and such a brilliant cast. It grips our attention from first shuffle to last bet. Great film. Make sure you check it out. All right, Wild Card. Some great father and son movies as we celebrate Father's Day, a day after Father's Day. You got to start with Field of Dreams.
Yeah.
I mean, someone says to you, Father's Day, is there a better Father's Day movie than Field of Dreams? It's about a father and son reconnecting. It's about redemption. It's about reconciliation. Hey, Dad, want to have a catch? I mean, that's the first one.
Right. I'm getting emotional.
I get choked up just thinking about it.
Oh, man. I actually enjoyed, you said father-son movies. There's more father-son movies than you think out there. Maybe not like, you know, as moving as Field of Dreams, but there's a lot of them, man. Liar, Liar is a father-son movie.
Yes.
That's a good one.
I can't lie.
Yeah.
Your boobs are big.
Mrs. Doubtfire.
Mrs. Doubtfire, awesome. My first day as a woman, and already I'm having hot flashes.
Big Daddy, Adam Sandler. Got to throw the a dumb rom-com on there. Yep. Come on, that's a good one. The Birdcage.
The Birdcage, I love. Gene Hackman's unbelievable in that. He's like playing this like stiff, upper-crust Republican. He's like, I don't see any books of intelligence around here. And Robin Williams and Nathan Lane, obviously very flamboyant gay couple. The Birdcage is very funny.
Another one you don't think of as a father-son movie, but you really think about the plot of it, Talladega Nights. The whole movie is Ricky Bobby trying to get his dad's approval. Hey, if you're not first, you're last.
It's true, actually. I never would have thought Talladega Nights is a father-son movie.
I'm telling you.
That's kind of shocking to me, actually, now that you think about it. I want to go back to Liar, Liar, because to me, that's like peak Jim Carrey.
Oh,
His physical comedy in that's amazing. And the outtakes are awesome. There's one scene where him and Susie Kurtz are yelling at each other, and he calls her a liar. And he goes, Jezebel. And she goes, overactor. And they both start breaking up laughing. It's
overactor.
Such a great outtake.
I remember that. Yes. That is such
one of my favorite outtakes. They both start losing. Yes, so
I'm
funny.
Kicking my ass. Do you mind? Such a great bathroom fight scene, and it's him beating his own ass.
I'm telling you, I know Ace Ventura is iconic, but Liar Liar might be the best Jim Carrey movie. I mean,
the pen is blue.
He's writing all over himself. Yeah, that scene in that boardroom is unbelievable. I want to go watch Liar Liar again. He's just screaming at everybody.
The claw. The claw's coming to get you.
Nebraska is really good. Dramatic film came out a few years ago. Bruce Dern. I like that film. Kramer versus Kramer, of course. Great Father and Son movie. Dustin Hoffman, Meryl Streep, Academy Award nominated. Big Fish, favorite of Scott Van Pelt. Second Van Pelt reference here in the show. The Road, which is a better book than the movie, but that starred Viggo Mortensen. Honey Boy came out a few years ago. Ben Lyons is a huge fan of that film. Shia LaBeouf. There Will Be Blood, again, one of my favorite movies of all time, but very disturbing but impressive father-son story. Boyhood, a film that I love. If you like Will Smith still, Pursuit of Happiness is one.
Oh, Pursuit of Happiness is good, yeah.
Yeah. Perfect World with Kevin Costner. Boys in the Hood,
yes.
Fathers and Sons. Lawrence Fishburne is great. You mentioned Robin Williams. He was in World's Greatest Dad, which is also a film with a dad in it. Again, kind of disturbing.
Finding
Road
Nemo.
To Perdition.
Finding Nemo.
Finding Nemo. Great father. Yes, yes, yes. You always, you know, when you think of these Disney movies, you always feel like they're mother and daughter, you know, like Bambi and stuff. But then you're like, no, no, Finding Nemo is a great father. Yeah. Albert Brooks, amazing. He's just so neurotic. He's just so Albert Brooks in the movie, which is what I love. Yeah, there's lots of great ones along the way. Hey, The Godfather's a great father and son movie. Sonny and Michael Corleone learning from their father, Vito. Lots of great options along the way. And one that I, of course, love, A Bronx Tale. I mean, the fact that Robert De Niro's kid, Calogero, is being influenced by Chaz Palminteri. When he asked Chaz Palminteri, is it better to be loved or feared? He said, I would say fear, because fear lasts longer than love. That's exactly, spoken like a mob boss. And one more for you, Road to Perdition. Tom Hanks playing a gangster, but a good gangster. A well-meaning gangster, looking out for his kids as well. Those are a few options. But like you said, Big Daddy is on the list. Oh. Legends of the Fall. Catch Me If You Can. John Q. Matthew McConaughey in Mud. Royal Tenenbaum.
Catch Me If You Can. I mean, I guess, yeah, I guess he's looking for his dad's approval. I guess because like they kind of have a father-son dynamic, Leo and Tom.
But you're right. Some of these kind of stretch the dynamics of father-son. And, of course, The Bicycle Thief. If you like your foreign films, great, great Italian film, a father and son way. But a father and a son literally looking for their bicycle, a classic of neorealist cinema from Vittorio De Sica. All right. Thank you so much for checking out Cinephile. I think we've done our work here. And thank you once again to our guests last week. More great guests coming along the way and more great movies to talk about. Next week, we're going to get our Elvis on. I don't know if Cody is an Elvis fan, but Baz Luhrmann's new film, Elvis, starring Tom Hanks and Austin Butler, as Elvis Presley, roaring into theaters. I'm also going to try to check out Lightyear here with the boys. Although, Tim Allen not voicing Lightyear. It's Chris Evans. I kind of wish it was Tim Allen. I think of Buzz Lightyear, I think of Tim Allen. But, them's the ropes. All that more coming up next time on Cinephile. Thanks again for checking us out. Go to Apple Podcasts, subscribe, rate, review, and I'll see you at the movies.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.